Welcome to Open Book. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Loretta Greco, who is the artistic director of Magic Theater in San Francisco in Fort Mason. Loretta Greco has been artistic director since 2008. She's also the director of a play, Se Llama Cristina by Octavio Solis, which is playing through February 17th at the Magic. Loretta Greco, Se Llama Cristina has a history, and you've been directly involved with that history up until now. So let's talk about the origins of the play and how it developed and what kind of work you had to do. How did it start?
Well, I think it's an interesting story. You know, talk about gestation and birthing, which if you've seen the play is hugely essential in terms of its thematic value. Octavio started this play a good 17 years ago, thinking about the arrival of his baby girl. And he wasn't sure what the heck it was. And his wife kept reading it, and he kept reading it, and pages kept coming. But he couldn't quite figure it out, so he shelved it. Fast forward 15 years, the Denver Center commissions Octavio to write a new play. And he says, maybe I'll pick up that baby girl play I started to write before the birth of Gracie. He writes what was then called Baby Girl, and at another time had a Christina Marie title. And he workshops it at Denver, and they option it for a year. They extend the option for another year. And then ultimately, they pass on this play. So Octavio thinks the play is dead. And he goes on. He's writing a new musical for South Coast. And I am season planning for this present season. This is last winter. And I lost a project, and I'm frantically looking for something great. And my friend Shirley Fishman at La Jolla Playhouse said, why aren't you doing that terrific baby girl play of Octavio's? And we had a commission with Octavio. I was working with him. I didn't know anything about this project. She sent it to me. I read it. My artistic staff read it. We unanimously loved this thing. I call Octavio, and he said, how did you get a hold of it? He said, I thought it was dead. And we met and talked about it, and what he said was so beautiful and what I believe to be true. He said, this was a magic play all along. So that's how I found out about it. Then we worked together for about 6 months at various places here at the Magic with our dramaturg, Dory Jacob, and then at the Black Swan Lab with Louis Douthat and the wonderful company at Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And then Hartford Stage, we worked with a wonderful company out there. And then he went to Boston Court with another team and worked on it there. And so, you know, it takes a village. And this is the first stop and the first sort of viewing. From here, it will be produced in Dallas at Kitchen Dog, and then it'll go to L.A. at the Boston Court. So already we have two other productions with it resonating out for Magic Theater's premiere.
What kind of relationship did that first script have to what is now playing at the Magic?
Well, I think the heart of it is absolutely still there. One of the things, to be utterly candid about it, was that I felt like the development was heading towards something that was a little bit more prescriptive, and I won't say pandering, but I felt like it wasn't muscular enough for our audience, in that I felt like Octavio was sort of putting turn signals on about 4 miles before he made the turn. And I felt like the heart of his writing is a kind of muscularity, and what we were trying to find was to say, you know what, it's not being produced at the Denver Center at a big regional theater. It's being produced at the Magic for an audience that has an appetite for something that stays well ahead of them. And so part of what we were doing was really chiseling and bringing back the theatricality and trying to make as muscular a journey as the play catapults forward and backward in time as we could.
Muscular. What do you mean by muscular?
I always look at something, you know, I've been doing this a long time, but finally, my taste and how I define something that's great is the experience of myself and the audience. So muscular to me is something that stays ahead of me, that has me leaning forward, that has me maybe, clutching my hands and realizing that there's some suspense. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but it's not so far ahead of me that I feel like I'm worried about what I should have read before I came to prepare, that I'm thinking I'm not smart enough to understand the proceedings, or I'm feeling like it's so oblique that I will never be able to permeate it. So I think it's about finding a balance. But for me, it's about taught, exciting language that then actors can wrap their mighty, you know, chops around and really be able to flex their muscles as well in our great communal space. You know, the thing about Octavio is it's got to be visceral, and he is such a visceral writer. And he's a writer where I think that most people who know his canon think first about the language. It is very poetic, so it's got highs and lows. It's also very street, very urban. So there's something fantastic about the muscle of that going from high to low in a split second that's also exciting both for the actors and the creative team and for the audience experiencing it.
I would think on some level all successful plays do that, right? I mean, all successful plays will kind of give you that, or am I wrong?
I think we all talk a lot about language. I think that the writers that I'm drawn to are using language in a kind of unique way. I do think that there is a trend right now of slightly smaller than life plays. Plays that are really, really looking at a very particular slice of life. And I'm not sure that language in the way that Octavio's using it in a kind of soaring manner, in a poetic manner, in a manner that also uses Spanish and English and goes from lots of F-bombs to something that's actually almost, a piece of poetic reverie that feels like an aria of sorts. So I think he is doing something rather unique.
Well, in thinking about it and thinking about the shows that the Magic puts on, it seems that the heightened verbiage of the shows also reflects the fact that they tend to move in a direction of fantasy, even if they're not fantastic. They jump across space and time, and that seems fairly unique to the Magic.
Well, you know, I think that it's something that excites me because I think, you know, it's funny looking at Say I'm a Christina because, you know, we came off opening the season with The Other Place, which also catapults through time, and memory plays an essential role in. You know, for me, in this space and with the aesthetic that started all the way back with McClure and Shepherd here, is that language was essential also because it's a postage stamp of a playing space. And that's not to say that we aren't interested visually in doing something very exciting and theatrical scenically. But what is required every time you come is to use your imagination. And there's nothing like an extraordinary muscular journey through time and language to get everybody's imaginative juices flowing. So I think it's a heightened kind of storytelling that we're trying to do.
When I talked to Jason Minidakis of Marin Theatre Company, he kept talking about kind of a dialogue between plays in any given season. Do you look at a season the same way?
I do. One of the things that I learned early on, and I'm going to sound really anti-big regional theater, and I'm not, but one of the things, I came up in a very big regional theater right out of grad school, and one of the things that I found kind of deadly was that kind of, okay, where is the American chestnut? Where is the European classic? Where is the African-American play? Where is the... And what I thought was more interesting and what that regional theater also began to evolve to, because it had a pretty visionary leader, was what is the conversation we want to be having with our audience? And how do these plays speak to one another and complement one another? Tonally, thematically, the commonality will always be that their substance is that the content for me is incredibly important and that it can be dressed up in a bunch of different ways in terms of the structure. But, you know, this season is plays about family. They couldn't be more distinct, but I think that there is something interesting because all of a sudden there were a lot of writers writing about family experiences. And I thought, okay, what is that about this moment in time for these very different writers? And what is it for us to look from The Other Place to Another Way Home to Say I'm a Christina to The Happy Ones to Terminus? and to look at these family stories from the traditional to the very skewed, all of them poetic and muscular and funny in their own right. So yeah, we do think about that. And I think our audience does as well. And I think it enriches the dialogue we have with them as we engage throughout a season.
Loretta Greco, the two plays that have already been produced this season, The Other Place by Shara White and Another Way Home by Anna Ziegler, The Other Place is a bit different from what you usually do because, and I noticed it when I was watching it, it was not, you know, in the process of being workshopped from company to company, but this was a finished play and it was obvious it was a finished play. Why did you decide to make that leap for that play?
Well, it had had one domestic production at a great company, Manhattan Class Company, MCC, that Bob Lapone and Bernie Telsey run. They had a fantastic run, but they didn't extend, and it didn't get picked up. And then Shar had an international company in Germany pick up The Other Place, and I think it ran for 8 months in rep with Arthur Miller and Tony Kushner. And no one else was going to do this stunning play. And we were in the process of working on something from scratch, working on the world premiere together of Annapurna last, not this past fall, but the fall before. And when Shar told me that, it broke my heart because I loved The Other Place. And I was determined that if he would be a part of it, whether he rewrote four sentences, four words, or four syllables, that if he were to commune with our audience again, that we would help get that play out into the, you know, the national scene. Because if that play can't get more than one domestic production, I don't think there's hope for new American plays at all. So it was that we were committed to Shar. We were committed to a body of work. The audience was utterly engaged with Annapurna. What happened was, 3 months before we went into rehearsal, Manhattan Theater Club said, we love it and we're going to do the Broadway production of The Other Place. So actually, your assumption is almost true. We came in with something that was nearly done, but then Shar was able to tweak thinking about this next New York production. So it was actually really invaluable to him. And things did alter, and it was a very different production from the off-Broadway premiere. So, you know, in this case, I felt like the West Coast premiere was really useful. And now he's got reviews also that talk about the play. The off-Broadway production starred the brilliant Laurie Metcalf, who's starring on Broadway now.
Right.
But it talked primarily about Laurie. Now he has, you know, a real series of reviews at a small theater where this was incredibly successful at the Magic and the Broadway reviews. So now I'm hoping he's going to have 50 productions of The Other Place next season.
Now that's on Broadway with Laurie Metcalf and Bill Pullman.
Amazing actors. And Laurie Metcalf's daughter is playing the other female role. Oh. So I'm very excited to be able to see it soon.
When you're doing, I guess, the postmortems, last 7 or 8 plays, which one do you think worked best? But which one do you think needed more work?
No, you know, we're really, my motto is, yeah, it's good, or it's very good, but we're not here for very good. We're here for great. And sometimes it's easier to get there than others. You know, I think a good example and something I would do again in a heartbeat is Lord Suz, Jesus in India. Here was something he had come with, American Wong Gap. We had done the premiere. We had developed it. It was my first season. It could not have been more of, it was the darling, you know, he was the darling of the season. When I announced that we were having him back, every audience would coo as if Lloyd was their nephew. But he wanted to tackle something huge. He wanted to tackle the lost years of Jesus. And we worked as hard and as tirelessly as we possibly could in development. We worked on it for 2.5 years. And then we got into rehearsal. And I mean, Lloyd wrote and revised. And Daniela, I've never seen a team so fluid and a cast so game to get new music, new songs, new scripts, things taken out every single day. And I will say, I wish that we had a chance to have another 4 weeks so we could have set him back in the writing room. Right now, it's in rehearsals almost. It's about to have an audience, a preview audience, at Mai Off-Broadway in New York, and he's done a huge rewrite. But I think it was one of those times where the audience really wished that it was a little more cooked. And for me, I thought, we couldn't have thrown more resources at it, human and otherwise, and it still wasn't quite enough. But I would do it again because it was a writer that we're going to support for the rest of his life, trying to do something incredibly ambitious.
You're listening to an interview with Loretta Greco, the artistic director of Magic Theater and also the director of Sayama Christina, which is playing through February 17th. What you say brings up an interesting point, which is that when you're working on plays that are in progress and you're stuck with a limited rehearsal time and you're stuck with a limited time to work on the text, if it's not something like the other plays, right, then on some level you're always going to want more time, won't you?
Yeah, you always do. And I think it's a crapshoot. It really is. In some ways, there's a level of work that will never happen until you're in rehearsal. And you have to call it, you know. I feel like sometimes things are developed for too long and the writer falls out of love with the project and then you lose that pulse, you know. So it is tricky business. I'll be honest, in the same season, Bruja had at the start of the season a title and nothing written until August. You know, it was critically acclaimed, it extended, it went very well. Louise and Lloyd, two very different writers, working from different set of ideas of things they wanted to accomplish. But what was similar was I felt like Lloyd had to get in a rehearsal room for a production to go the next step. The same with Louise. If I hadn't scheduled it, Louise still wouldn't have written Bruja. So I think it is about trying to gauge when is the right time and also trying to massage an audience to say, if you really believe in new work with the writer, that means that it's going to be a wide range of experiences in terms of what you see and experience when you show up at the theater.
And you use a great group of Bay Area actors. You use the same people frequently, like Rod Knapp.
I really believe in community, and I think that every time you work with a writer, every time you work with a director, every time you work with an actor, again, the vocabulary is deeper. The ability to take bigger risks earlier is ample. The playmaking and the tenor of the room, you know, having Rod in the room, I think this is the fifth show we've done together. You know, there's an incredible community of talent here. So what I'm trying to do is build a community of writers so that the actors as well have this shorthand. And in this case, Rod had worked with Octavio, you know, 2 decades before I had. Sean as well. This was Sean's 10th production with Octavio. So the shorthand that goes with that is extraordinary. And I think that, you know, as an audience member, what you know is you're going to see the best of the Bay Area, whether that be Jim Carpenter, whether that be Patrick Alperone, whether that be Rod Knapp. You know, it's thrilling for us to be able to welcome people home. And, you know, with Rod and Sean, it's also lovely because we don't audition them. I call them and I say, how would you feel about doing X? And I think that's something that they've earned.
Loretta Greco, let's talk a little bit about the two upcoming productions. You say these are all family plays. What is The Happy Ones, and where did it come from, and how far along in the development is it?
Well, The Happy Ones is a really unique project. We at Magic work on premieres, second, and third productions with the playwright at our side. And that last part is really important because if a playwright's not game to work on it and doesn't have work to be done on the play, we don't do it. If Shar had said to me, oh, Mazel Tov on the other place, we wouldn't have done the production.
Really?
He was here Oh, he was here. You know, he was here for most of the time, and he was with me casting. And so we don't shop for new plays. We work on new plays with the playwrights. So The Happy Ones is interesting because I'm having dinner with Luis Alfaro. We're dining with a playwright that I love but hadn't seen in a decade, Julie Marie Myatt. And Julie had been here during Chris's tenure. And I said, what are you writing? We had worked together at New Dramatist in New York. She had something new, but what caught her ear was that I said we do second and third productions as well. So the next morning in my inbox, there was Julie's new play, but there was another play, and she said, The Happy Ones has had two productions. I think it's one of my best plays. I love it. I think there's still work to be done, and I would love nothing more than to do that work at the Magic. So we read the new play, which we liked a lot, but we loved The Happy Ones. And Julie's dad lives here. She has a real Bay Area connection. You know, one of the pieces of the litmus test is that we don't ask people who I don't think we will want back. We don't like one-offs. We really want to be able to have a writer develop a canon here. So Julie felt like she fit all that criteria. And The Happy Ones, what's really cool, it's unique because it's a third production, but it's also unique because it really is a story about grief, but it's from a male perspective. And I found that really, really distinct. It's about a guy who has it all and loses everything in a second. And it's about how he deals with it. And it's funny as hell. I think that everyone will recognize everyone within the piece. It's a bit of a period piece. It's the late 70s. It's set in Orange County. And I'm really delighted to be able to work with Julie again. And the other thing that's special about this is Jonathan Mosconi is directing it. And I'm thrilled because he is extraordinary with this material. I think he's deft in terms of the way he deals with tone. I was blown away by his Clybourne Park at ACT, and I think it's going to be a really exciting, exciting experience for our audiences.
How many times do you read a play before you're blown away?
You know, I trust instincts. I trust my first read. If I have to read something twice, you know, I rarely read something twice. The exception would be if it's like the fifth play of a day, or if it's a play I picked up at 11:30 at night and I wasn't 100%, I will start again. But Annapurna, Sayama Christina, Oedipus, the first 20 pages, I read them and I called the agent and said, we'll do it.
The final play of the season is Terminus. How did you come to that one, and where is that one in development?
Well, it's an odd duck to classify. I fell in love with it about 2 weeks after I got this job and months before I moved here. It was at Under the Radar Festival in New York, Mark Russell's incredible festival of international work in New York, and it was the Abbey Theater production of Marco Rowe's new play, Terminus. Oh, talk about language. He's my favorite Irish writer. I mean, I'll just say it. No exceptions. He's my favorite Irish writer. I don't know if you were around for Howie the Rookie, but when I ask people at the Magic what are your favorite productions, you know, of course, there's a bevy of Shepherd plays that Howie the Rookie is just as often in the mix. Mark's language is like Shakespeare meets Jacobean tragedy meets hip-hop meets Dr. Seuss meets, I don't know. It's the most incredible conflation of pop and classic. And it is a story that is dark and wickedly funny. And it's about language. You could close your eyes and listen. And it's as if you're having the Odyssey read to you. I have tried to get it every year since. And the Abbey was insistent that they tour the Abbey Company's production. So they have done a couple days here, a couple days there, a week. So what we're doing is the first American production with American actors and an American director. We're thrilled to have John Tracy, also part of the bevy of Bay Area talent, coming back to direct this production. And Mark is going to be here. We're very excited about that, and we hope that that will mean that his next new play will have a home here at Magic, but we're really excited to have him back.
Is that play kind of written in stone, or again, are you going to be working to revise it?
No, I think that what's going to be interesting with Mark is it's done, but what isn't done is the relationship between it and an American audience. What does it mean to have an American cast, and does that require different kinds of changes or massaging in a different way? And so I'm very excited and curious to see what happens with text itself with Mark and John and I in a room together with those actors.
What is it about Terminus that's structured differently from the other plays at the Magic?
Terminus has two women and one male on stage. They don't move. They are isolated, although they certainly metaphorically and theatrically speak to one another. They don't turn, it's not dialogue as you traditionally, psychologically, in a linear, aggressive structure would experience it. Yet it is a play that slowly but surely begins to weave itself so that you understand how inextricably linked these three characters are. Although in the beginning, you really believe you're listening to three different unique stories, and they begin to merge.
Sounds a little Beckettish.
You know, I think that's a compliment. In a way, yes. I think it also is a bit mythic and Greek. And then there's Mark. He's fearless in that the play is incredibly visceral, it's incredibly sensual, and it's very dark. It's very dark. And it's one of those plays that is interesting to me because we've had some people, like actors, say, you know, I'm going to pass. I don't think I even want to audition for this. And the last time that happened was when we did Linda McLean's Any Given Day, where people said, this is a little dark. I don't know if I'm comfortable with it. So I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, but take it as you will. I mean, I never got ahead of this story, ever. And it was like having a modern-day Shakespeare sit on the edge of my bed telling me one of the most intricate, stunningly suspenseful stories, and a kind of love story and a kind of story of family as well. I don't want to spoil this. I don't mean to be oblique, but it really is, in its structure, an incredible work of art.
Loretta Greco, one thing I've noticed happening more and more, and I've seen it in past few productions at the Magic, I've seen it at ACT, one act, no more intermissions. What's going on?
It is just simply a trend right now. Writers are thinking that way. 80% of everything that I'm reading is a 70 to 100 minute play that's intermissionless. I don't know if that is because writers are hoping, like they are when they write two-handers, that they're more easily produced. In regionals, one of the big litmus tests is how much can we sell during intermission and can we put two intermissions in? And, you know, that line in my budget has disappeared because I can't sell anything in the middle of these things.
You know, getting back to the question about why so many family plays now, my guess is that during the Bush administration, people were thinking politics because the Bush administration was so god-awful. Now it's kind of, maybe we shouldn't be ignoring, say, you know, drone attacks, right, you know, or crazy Republicans, or the national security state, but it seems at least that maybe there's an adult in the White House and people are turning inward. I don't know.
You know, it's so interesting. For a few years, there was a bevy of response to the war in a lot of different ways, a lot of different structures, and a lot of, you know, some of them dead on, very naturalistic, spot on exploring what that meant, and then others a little bit more in a slightly more abstract way. And then these stories started pouring forth, and it's interesting because some of them are very small and slices of life, and, you know, I think 4,000 miles is one of those, slice of, you know, one particular story. You know, for me, I feel like we're all a piece of a family, whether we like it or not. And I also love politics that are really personal. You know, the politics of family are really interesting. I picked this season. I mean, it happened that the short list just kept getting plays added, and we just kept talking with the reading group. Isn't this funny? It's another family drama. Even though it's completely different from the one before it, it's still at its core looking at family. And I have a couple that I'm thinking about doing next year as well because they're just so darn good. But I think it's also about the personal, is that the family is an envelope for writers that is knowable and allows them to explore their own personal politics in a way that maybe a more conjured theatrical canvas might not.
Loretta Greco, how close are you to finalizing the next season?
Not at all.
Really?
I've got 2.5 plays. How about that? 2.5 of the 5. You know, it's tricky because of that dialogue that you want to have. And it's tricky because at some point I am going to have to say, oi, enough of the family drama. And you know, and I just wrote one of my most beloved directors, and I said, I want to know what's on your list, but I don't want you to send me another family drama because I have enough. We're going to do a legacy piece next year, and I'm looking at something brand new, a world premiere from a writer that we've also supported in my 5-year tenure. And then, you know, there are a bunch of things in the hopper, and I'm really excited. But it's not easy finding 5 because, A, you want them to speak to one another. B, you want the audience to feel like it's a fresh season and a fresh new set of stories. C, you want to support some new writers and then writers that are already in the family. You know, I'm looking to be surprised, and I'm looking to think about what's a play that we can produce that probably no one else may have the adventuresome spirit to, or that we need to do this so other people can see that they can. I mean, a lot of times that's a piece of the decision. So I think probably another 6 weeks and we'll have the whole thing done.
When I talked to Jason over at Marin Theater Company, he said the maximum size of a cast over there, because of the building and everything else, is about 9 people. What's your maximum size?
Well, let's see. There were 38 people in The Lily's Revenge, so I guess so far 38. We don't think that way.
Really?
We really don't. We really don't. I hate it when someone calls and says, I've got a two-hander. It's like, that's not who I am. It's not what this place is. If we fall in love with something and we think it's important, we're going to find a way to do it. Like the 5-hour, you know, The Lily's Revenge. It's like, it took me 2 years to figure out how, and to figure out how we'd have 6 directors and 38 performers, but we did it. Linda McLean has a new play that we just workshopped that I think is probably 10 to 12 people, but more than that needs a design team that's rather extensive, and also needs a design creative team that actually probably spends the entire rehearsal period with us. We're figuring out how we're going to raise the not just the money, but, you know, the human resources to do that. Yeah, we're looking at content and what we feel like is important to put out into the American theater and to resonate in the new play ecosystem, and then we figure out a way to do it. There's probably no other artistic director that when it says 2 people, I go, really? I mean, you know, Annapurna, when he said it's 2 people, I thought, oh, I'm less likely to do it. But then, of course, the story was so huge that I thought, how could I not?
One final question for you, Loretta Greco. You directed Sayama Christina. Do you direct plays for other organizations, and do you ever plan to direct movies?
I have said no to everybody for the last 5 years. I had one outstanding commitment when I took this job. So I went to South Coast and it was actually something that then we brought here, with John Kolbenbach. I have found running the Magic to be a more than a full-time job. And, as a piece of that, and the board has been incredibly supportive. You know, I direct two plays, and that is just, you know, I'm very monogamous to this place. So my notion is in the next couple of years, I am going to start directing at other places again. But I've really tried to commit myself very seriously to rebuilding the reputation here. And I didn't feel that if I was out promoting my own career in other theaters that I could seriously do that.
And film?
Film. There are a couple of plays that I would love to work on adapting for the screen. It's not where I live, I'll be honest. I love the theater. I love the theater. I've not stopped being enchanted by it all these years as a theater goer and maker, and I don't see that fading anytime soon. So, you know, life is long. We'll see.
And playwriting?
Playwriting, never. Are you kidding what these guys do? I think, listen, there's a pact. The pact is that I push writers to the brink. And if they, for a second, thought that I was interested in writing, I wouldn't be able to have the same kind of really sometimes overly muscular relationship in terms of the kinds of, I won't say demands, but the kind of ways that I try and push writers to be the best writers they can be.
You've been listening to an interview with Loretta Greco, the artistic director of the Magic Theater in San Francisco, and also the director of Se Llama Cristina by Octavio Solis, a world premiere production which plays through February 17th at the Magic. Also coming up is Fat Cat Dinner with Sam Shepard. I'd like to talk a little about him just simply because he is kind of like the symbol of magic, because didn't he get a start here?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we talk about playwrights' residencies and we talk about giving artistic homes all the time in this country in the American theater. Sam actually was given an artistic home here, and he lived here and for a decade made work that was developed and produced at the Magic. He won his Pulitzer Prize here for Barry Child. He made True West here. He made Fool for Love here. He made 8 different, very significant short plays in that early tenure. But I think the important thing was he knew he had a home. He was going to write, and it was going to be produced. And it was a revolutionary thing in those days. And now, you know, something that we still shouldn't take for granted because it's getting rarer and rarer again.
You're in touch with him. I know that he's been doing a lot of acting. Is he getting back into playwriting, do you know?
I think that he has 3 different writing projects going on right now. And Heartless had a tremendous run in New York at the Signature Theater. Signature did a season of Sam early on in its tenure, and they just did this world premiere last season. I had the pleasure of seeing it. So Sam worked on that, and I think he has a couple of plays and another project in the hopper. And then there are his stunning short stories, which he has 3 anthologies of. So he's a quite a busy writer and actor, yeah.
For more information on The Magic, which is in Fort Mason Center, you can go to magictheater.org. I'm Richard Molinsky for Open Book.